The fighting in Mali continues between government forces, French troops, and the militants who have seized much of the northern part of the country. The bombing and insertion of foreign forces into Mali comes on the heels of numerous military interventions in Africa by the West in recent years, and in fact may be an unintended consequence of some of those campaigns. We're joined now by Professor Peter Chilson. His e-book is called We Never Knew Exactly Where, Dispatches from the Lost Country of Mali. Welcome to our show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Aerial bombing by the French of militant strongholds has continued, and today the French defense minister said there were 1,400 French troops on the ground, 600 more than he said there were yesterday. Is it likely that French involvement will escalate even further?
Well, yes. I believe they've planned for 2,500 troops, at least for the foreseeable near future. And France has already said that this conflict is not going to be a short one, so I imagine there will be a substantial increase of troops in the future.
Well, the United States has resisted getting too involved in Syria. Do you think that we might get involved in this one?
Well, we've already pledged intelligence help to the effort, but the United States has a policy of not extending meaningful, strong military aid to regimes that have been set up by coup d'etat. So our aid, they're in a tricky situation right now. I think the United States wants to extend as much aid as it possibly can, but it has to somehow get around that policy.
Well, there was a military coup in Mali last March. That's what you're talking about. What
right.
were the reasons given for it?
Well, the coup was launched by a group of mid-level junior army officers led by Captain Amadou Sonogo. They were very
unhappy. Who was trained in the United States, wasn't he?
He was trained. He's an intelligence officer in the Malian army, and he was trained in the United States. In fact, he made a number of visits to the United States for various different training programs. The Malian army had been fighting the uprising of Tuareg rebels that began in January, and which is where this whole situation really began. Many of those rebels were mercenaries in the Libyan army, and they returned to Mali with arms looted from the arsenals of Mali's former regime that collapsed in November of 2011. And they returned, they'd been, this was the fifth Tuareg rebellion since 1960, but this time the Tuareg rebels were armed with a firepower they'd never really had before, and they overwhelmed the Malian army forces. And the Malian army felt that it really was not getting the support it needed from the civilian regime. Soldiers were not getting the necessary food, the necessary arms, or even footwear in the field. And that was what prompted the coup d'etat.
You write, Mali today is a country of surprising reversals and disappointments. What do you mean by that?
Well, it really starts with that coup d'etat, which reversed 21 years of democracy. Really, up until that point, Mali was a beacon, a model for democracy in Africa and for the development of the arts, the music industry.
That was after years of a military dictatorship, wasn't it?
Right. 27 years of military dictatorship, which was ended in 1991. And the man who led that particular coup d'etat later became Mali's Amadou Toumani Traoré, later became Mali's second civilian president, and he was the president who was deposed in March, but he's a former Malian army officer himself, and he led the coup d'etat that overthrew General Moussa Traoré in 1991.
Now, often when we see turmoil in African countries, we talk about the legacy of colonialism. It was a French colony.
Yes.
Do we see a legacy of French colonialism here, and how does that lead to the French mission now?
Well, it's a very delicate situation. France militarily subdued this region in 1893 when it put down the jihadist empire of El Hadji Omar Tall, who was head of the Tukulor Empire and the founder of that empire. He himself was an Islamist intellectual, the French put down his empire after about 50 years of fighting in 1893, and that legacy really does play in a little bit here. El Hadji Omar Tall, though he was a jihadist and committed lots of horrible atrocities, his reputation in West Africa is more as a freedom fighter and a man who opposed colonialism than as a jihadist, and that's one of the ironies here. And now the French are back in the same general area where the actual empire gave its last dying gasps in 1893. And so these two sides, the jihadists and the French, are essentially fighting over the same territory right now.
Well, today, wouldn't the rebels be seen as freedom fighters by some and jihadists by others?
Yes, I think so. And I think the rebels right now are trying to portray themselves as freedom fighters in this new conflict with France. There are, as you said, I think 1,600 French troops on the ground. And that came clear in this new hostage taking in Algeria, where elements of Akim raided a British Petroleum natural gas plant and took hostages. That situation is still unfolding, and they immediately demanded that French troops get out of Mali, that this is not a place that they should be.
Well, that's not what's happened. Yeah. According to the Associated Press, the hostage situation in the Algerian natural gas complex became quite tragic. The Islamic militants claim that Algerian helicopter attacks left 35 hostages and 15 of their captors dead.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So do you think this might expand to other countries as well?
I think that is what Al-Qaeda means to do, and I think that is exactly what France fears, and that's one of the main reasons why France intervened, and President François Hollande has already said as much, that he fears that this will spread to the west of Africa and perhaps beyond. France has already increased its alert level for fear of terrorist attacks in France itself related to this. And part of this goes back a little bit in history. There were attacks in Spain in 2004, a series of bombs that were set off on trains in Madrid, and those attacks were connected to Al-Qaeda elements in North Africa. So there is real precedent and fear for this.
I'm talking with Peter Chilson, who's the author of We Never Knew Exactly Where, Dispatches from the Lost Country of Mali. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. I gather that Mali is one of those countries that exists largely because it was drawn up by colonial map makers who had little idea of who or what they were drawing lines over. Is that why the Tuaregs have been rebelling against the central government so many times over recent decades?
Well, that's partly true. The bulk of the Tuareg population, there are around roughly between 6 and 7 million Tuaregs living in the Sahel and Sahara region of northern and western Africa. About 3.5 million of them live, most of their population live in Mali and in Niger. And in, I'm not quite precise on the date here, but around 1958, after the French announced that they were planning for the independence of their West African colonies, and they were going to let those colonies gain their independence with the borders existing in the way the French had drawn them, the Tuareg leadership wrote to President de Gaulle and begged him not to let these borders, let these countries go independent with the existing borders. They wanted to be able to somehow redraw those borders to reflect their own cultural realities, or set up their own independent state in the Sahara. And that is the focus of the Tuareg rebellion that began in January, is the setting up of a of their own state in the Sahara to protect their nomadic way of life, which is in defiance of these borders.
But then they have allied themselves with the Islamists. Are the Tuaregs extreme Islamists?
No, they are not. Although there are some Tuareg, they are not historically extreme Islamists. Historically, they have really they have adopted Islam and they are Muslim, but they have really. True to the nature of the independent nature of their culture, they have resisted being completely co-opted by Islam. Although there are some Tuareg leaders who are involved in the jihadist movement in northern Mali, for example, Iyad Ag Ghali, who is the head of Ansar Din. He is a Tuareg. He was a leader in the Tuareg rebel movement in the rebellion in both Mali and Niger in the early 1990s. After the peace agreement was signed, he's a Malian. The Malians basically tried to bring him into the fold in the government, and he became a diplomat based in Saudi Arabia. And he has essentially abandoned the Tuareg rebel movement and the search for an independent state in the Sahara and joined the jihadist cause. But most Tuaregs, it's very, very safe to say, most Tuaregs are not involved in that jihadist mindset.
Well, you note that northern Mali is currently the largest al-Qaeda-controlled space in the world, but
yes.
You suggest it's an independent branch of al-Qaeda. How much of its orders are coming from Pakistan or Afghanistan?
Well, that's not absolutely clear. A lot of the, I believe they're a lot of their funding. They are affiliated with the al-Qaeda leadership in Pakistan. How directly they are following orders from them is not clear. Certainly there's some funding involved, some funding help from there, but al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb has managed to fund its own operations by kidnapping Westerners.
They've
raised about $100 million.
Is the current violence in Mali directly linked to the 2011 NATO intervention in Libya?
Yes, yes it is. In the late 1970s and early 1980s, Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, the head of Libya's government at the time, began recruiting Tuaregs from Mali and Niger into his military. And he promised them, in exchange for military training, that he would support their movement for an independent state in the Sahara. But he wanted them to come and fight in his army and fight in some of his proxy wars around West Africa. For example, he put many Tuareg mercenaries into battle in an eight-year war he fought in Chad in order to gain control of some of Chad's mineral resources up in the north along the Chadian-Libyan border. The figure is that he over time recruited something like 10,000 Tuaregs into his forces, mainly from Mali and Niger. When his regime collapsed, those forces looted weapons from his arsenals and returned to Mali and Niger. But they returned in some disarray. They were being hunted down by the Libyan rebels. There was a great deal of anger in Libya about these mercenaries fighting for Gaddafi. And when they arrived at the borders of these two countries, they were not quite ready yet to take over Niger and Mali. And Niger, as a result, managed to take advantage of this and disarm the Tuareg rebels at the borders.
Mali borders.
Mali did not do that.
Now, Mali borders on another country that was the focus of a recent French military invention, Côte d'Ivoire. Are these two conflicts also connected?
Not really. They're two separate conflicts. Though it's interesting, the New Forces rebels, who were the major part of the rebel alliance that overthrew Laurent Gbagbo in April of 2011, Laurent Gbagbo and his government tried to paint them as Islamist radicals in order to whip up sentiment against them and particularly gain more sympathy from perhaps the United States and other Western governments. For example, one of the New Forces sub-commanders in the North was a man I met several times named Usman Koulibaly, whose nickname given to him by his men was Bin Laden. And they gave him that nickname because he was a bearded practicing Muslim, but he was not. He's not an Islamic radical, and the New Forces had an entirely different agenda that had nothing to do with Islam. It had a lot more to do with some ethnic infighting and definitely disagreements over land resources in Ivory Coast.
Now, some critics have suggested that the West interventions seem to have created a kind of perpetual crisis machine. A bombing campaign in one country leads to destabilization of a neighbor, which is then solved by more bombing. Would you see that as a correct assessment?
Partly. Certainly the situation in Mali is very much connected to the unintended consequences of Western aid to the rebels in Libya. And in Ivory Coast, the French definitely intervened there to help overthrow Laurent Gbagbo, even with help from the United Nations in the closing days of the battle there, although the New Forces carried that's the name of the rebel groups that came down from the north. They really carried the bulk of the weight of that battle, but there was an intervention by the French in the end that helped push Laurent Gbagbo out of power. And right now, Ivory Coast is having a lot of problems with its own stabilities. There are elements of Laurent Gbagbo's forces that are operating in the southern borderlands with Liberia. There's still a lot of instability, particularly in southern Ivory Coast. And that conflict there is not over. And there's a great deal of sentiment and anger in the south over the way the French intervened rather than letting the Ivorians settle these differences themselves.
Peter Chilson is the author of We Never Knew Exactly Where, Dispatches from the Lost Country of Mali, available in an e-book. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, sir. I enjoyed it.